When you think of Ireland, what comes to mind? Probably the color green, shamrocks, leprechauns, Guinness, bagpipes. All of these things are commonly associated with Ireland because of one holiday, St. Patrick's Day. But what if I told you that St. Patrick's official color was actually blue? That bagpipes are actually Scottish, not Irish, and that in Ireland it was illegal to sell beer on St. Patrick's Day until 1961. What if I told you that St. Patrick, the man himself, the patron saint of Ireland, was not even Irish, nor a saint? And that the modern holiday of St. Patrick's Day is much more an American invention than an Irish one. Let's fix all that. Hello, I'm Shay LaFontaine, and you're listening to History Fix, where I discuss lesser-known true stories from history you won't be able to stop thinking about. Happy St. Patrick's Day! Pretty stoked that this episode is randomly set to air on the actual day this time. That was pure luck. Luck of the Irish, perhaps. I've noticed folks tend to like my holiday-related episodes. So far, I've covered Halloween, Christmas, Valentine's Day, and now St. Patrick's Day, and at this point, I can't even decide which one is the weirdest or the least understood. It's really made me realize how much we love wholeheartedly celebrating, like really going all out, for holidays we know almost nothing about. Any excuse to party, we will take it. Before I launch into this one, I need to ask a favor real quick. I always put this at the end of every episode, but most of you probably hit pause before you get to it. If you would, if you haven't already, pretty please rate and follow or subscribe or whatever to History Fix on whatever app you use to listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, whatever. That is super helpful in getting History Fix into the algorithm that helps other people find it. Also, if you like it yourself, feel free to tell your friends about it, share it on your social medias and such. I've always had a lot of success reaching new listeners through Instagram, but I honestly think they shadow banned me. I don't know if that's a real thing. I'm starting to think it is. I posted a reel on there a few weeks ago featuring Hitler. It was for the eugenics episode. It was very anti-Hitler, by the way. But they did not take kindly. They didn't remove it or flag it or anything. But ever since then, they are just not pushing my posts out at all. I upset the almighty Instagram algorithm. So anyway, I'm asking for your help to get the word out about History Fix. And if you don't follow me on Instagram or TikTok and you want to, it's at History Fix Podcast on both. Go on there and like some stuff. Maybe we can get me out of this shadow banned pit they've cast me into. Okay, anyway, back to the show. St. Patrick's Day, as you probably correctly guessed, is a holiday in honor of St. Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland. Although, fun fact, he isn't actually a saint. Yeah, Patrick was never officially canonized by the Catholic Church. This story is full of bombshells like that. Also, he wasn't Irish. Patrick was Roman, technically, but he was born in what we would now call England in the late 300s. This was before the fall of the Roman Empire, but pretty late in the game. At this point, the empire had spread all the way to the British Isles and included England, but not Ireland or Scotland. When he was born, Patrick probably had a different name. He seems to have acquired the name Patrick, or actually the Latin version, Patricius, much later when he became a priest. He is thought to have been born with the name Maewyn Sukat. His father was a Christian deacon, but that isn't really what you think. His family was not super religious. His father probably just pursued the position of deacon because of tax incentives. So they're not like this super holy family or anything. When Maewyn, but I'm going to call him Patrick to avoid confusion, when he was Maewyn at this point, but I'm still calling him Patrick. When Patrick was 16 years old, he was kidnapped by some Irish folk who raided his family estate. So remember, Ireland is not part of the Roman Empire, but it is very close to Roman Britain. So there would have been some butting of heads here. Ireland probably felt this oppressive force that was the Roman Empire creeping ever closer. Ireland at this time is pagan. It's like ancient Celtic Ireland. We don't know very much about it at this point in time because they didn't have a written language. Everything was passed down word of mouth in the ancient Celtic culture. So all written accounts are coming from Roman reports. So, you know, factor that in, please. According to Dechara, which calls itself the Insider Guide to Ireland, quote, "The Celtic people of Ireland are said to have been a striking and colorful people, tall, fair, and strong, with brightly dyed and embroidered clothing, gold and silver jewelry, and in the case of the women, elaborately braided hair. There is a problem here, though. The Celtic people of Ireland almost certainly didn't exist as a homogeneous race, and much of what we think we know about them was essentially created in the 19th century." End quote. So that's fun. But Ireland was different than Roman Britain in a few important ways. It was divided into many separate kingdoms, some of them quite small, and all ruled by different chieftains, whereas the Roman Empire was an empire with one central powerful emperor. Also, Ireland was pagan, worshipping many deities, while Rome, starting in the late 300s, was relentlessly Christian, Catholic, right? So I'm getting like Wild West vibes from 4th century Ireland, and I don't hate it. So Patrick gets kidnapped by the Irish, his Wild West neighbors. They take him to Ireland, where he is enslaved as a shepherd for 6 years. According to History.com, there is some dispute about where exactly he was taken in Ireland. Some scholars believe that it was Mount Slemish in County Antrim, and others are certain that it was County Mayo near Killala. Regardless, this is really crazy to me to think that you could just be like chilling at home as a 16-year-old kid, just doing whatever the 4th century equivalent of playing Xbox was, and raiders just bust into your house and cart you off to Ireland for 6 years, make you raise their sheep. Pretty wild. But this was not that uncommon at the time. It was just kind of part of life. It was just one of the risks of being alive at that time. So for Patrick, I mean, it would have sucked, but also there was probably a good bit of just, okay, this is my life now. And he just sort of settles into living as an enslaved shepherd in Ireland. But, I mean, he did get kidnapped and enslaved, so to cope with some of the grief he was inevitably feeling over that, he turns to religion and becomes a devout Christian during his captivity. According to Patrick's own writings, God spoke to him in a dream at this point, telling him that he needed to leave Ireland. So he's like, okay, God told me to leave Ireland, so I guess I'll leave Ireland now. And he just walks to the coast and hops on a ship back to Britain, which, like, if you could do that this whole time, why wait 6 years? I don't know. He was waiting for God to tell him to do it, I guess. But he makes his way back to Britain. There he has a second vision. This time it's an angel who tells him that he has to go back to Ireland. Which, like, can you imagine? I feel like they're just messing with him now. But the angel tells him he has to go back to Ireland to convert the pagan Irish people to Christianity. So before he does that, he starts studying to become a priest, which takes 15 years. So he's like, what, he was 16 and then 6 years enslaved and now 15 years studying to become a priest. So he's like late 30s now. Pope Celestine sends him back to Ireland with a mission of converting the Irish to Christianity, just like the angel said. So this is 432. But 1 year before this, in 431, the Pope sent some other guy named Palladius to do this same thing, convert the Irish to Christianity. So when Patrick arrives, a lot of Irish people had already converted. So the whole St. Patrick was the one who introduced Christianity to Ireland thing is yet another unfounded myth. But Patrick was very successful in continuing this work in Ireland, and he did become known for converting the Irish, even if he didn't start it. He did this by incorporating pre-existing Irish culture and religious rituals into the brand of Christianity he was teaching them. For example, he used bonfires to celebrate Easter, since that was already a thing the Irish were doing, and it was a familiar religious ritual to them. He just tweaked it and made it Christian. He also supposedly came up with the design of the Celtic cross by putting a sun in the middle of a cross, which is a Christian symbol. He Celticified a cross, making it more familiar, less foreign to the Irish and therefore more accepted. One legend says that he used Irish clovers, or shamrocks, to teach about the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, because they have three leaves. So honestly, he's a great teacher. Dude was a great teacher. He really thought about how to cater to the Irish so that they would understand and accept what he was teaching them. He was very good at differentiation. One thing Patrick most certainly did not do was banish the snakes from Ireland. That is, first of all, an impossible task for one man. Second, there were never any snakes in Ireland. They just aren't native to that island. It's like how there are no kangaroos in Mexico. You wouldn't be like, yeah, you know, San Jose banished all the kangaroos from Mexico, right? It's that absurd. But that likely came up in Irish folklore much later as a metaphor for the way St. Patrick got rid of the Celtic pagan religion, which was viewed, of course, as evil. And then, you know, the snake from the Adam and Eve story, and snakes are evil, and it's all nonsense, of course. But even though he didn't do that, he did do a lot of work to bring Christianity to Ireland. And then he died, reportedly, on March 17th, 461. People unofficially started honoring St. Patrick on March 17th, starting in the 9th or 10th century, but it wasn't made an official Catholic feast day until 1631. And I suspect ulterior motives for doing this, because March 17th falls during Lent, which is the 40 days leading up to Easter, where Catholics are restricted from doing things like eating meat, dancing, having fun, etc. So throwing a feast day in there, St. Patrick's Day, it was kind of like a cheat day where they got to party a little bit. I mean, they at least got to eat meat. They did not get to drink on St. Patrick's Day, though. It was an official Catholic holy day, so pubs were closed on St. Patrick's Day until 1961, actually. So it was not traditionally a drinking holiday in Ireland. Now, it's probably one of the biggest drinking holidays. I would say that and Mardi Gras and maybe like New Year's Eve, it's up there. But that is thanks to America. So let's get into the Irish-American part of the story, because that's where St. Patrick's Day really takes off. In last week's episode about the Great Hunger, I talked a lot about Irish immigration to the U.S. during the mid-19th century. But Irish people had been immigrating before that, not in quite the same numbers, but they were steadily trickling in. These earlier Irish immigrants were Protestant, though, not Catholic. Or if they were Catholic, they at least pretended to be Protestant or quickly converted to Protestant. Because, as I said last week, there was a lot of anti-Catholic sentiment in the U.S. We will come back to that again. The earliest evidence of any sort of St. Patrick's Day celebration in what is now the U.S. comes from St. Augustine, Florida, actually, in 1600. It was a Spanish colony at that time, and, you know, the Spanish are very Catholic, so it sort of makes sense that they would be celebrating a Catholic holiday. Also, there was apparently an Irish priest living there at the time. According to a History.com article by Christopher Klein, historian Michael Francis was researching Spanish gunpowder expenditure logs from St. Augustine, and he noticed that gunfire or cannon blasts were noted as being used to honor St. Patrick in 1600. So that's probably the first time anyone in the Americas was like, hey, let's do a thing for St. Patrick's Day. But despite those records, Boston claims to be the first to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. On March 17th, 1737, so like way later than the St. Augustine thing, some Irish immigrants in Boston formed the Charitable Irish Society in honor of St. Patrick, which was to help Irish people living in the city. It's still a thing, too, which is cool. It's the oldest Irish organization in North America. I do want to note that the guys who formed it were not Catholic. They were Presbyterian. But I don't know. They're honoring a Catholic saint. Perhaps they were closeted Catholics just trying to fit in. The first St. Patrick's Day parade supposedly took place in New York City in 1762. But it wasn't at all like a modern day St. Patrick's Day parade. First of all, no one was wearing green. It was actually a band of redcoats, like British soldiers. These were Irish-born soldiers in the British Army, because New York was still a British colony at this point, but not for much longer. These guys marched through Lower Manhattan to a St. Patrick's Day breakfast at a local tavern. But this is, you know, this obviously upset the American-born nativists, who responded by erecting effigies of Irishmen wearing rags and necklaces made of potatoes holding whiskey bottles. They clearly had nothing better to do than that. But this was actually outlawed in 1803. So, 1762 to 1803. So they're doing this for 40 years? They're erecting these effigies with the whiskey bottle? These guys need a new hobby. But it was outlawed in 1803. But the stirrings of anti-Irish, anti-Catholicism are alive and well already in the mid-1700s, clearly. And if you listened to last week's episode, you know how damaging these negative stereotypes about Irish people came to be during the potato blight and subsequent famine that started in 1845. So, the first St. Patrick's Day parade was a bunch of redcoats. So they were obviously wearing red. And St. Patrick's official color was actually blue. Where does the green come in? That started with a rebellion in Ireland in 1798 against British oppression and conquest. A failed rebellion. But they chose to wear green because British soldiers were red, and green is the opposite of red. So green came to be associated with Irish pride as basically the anti-redcoat, which I never put that together. I just thought green was the color of Ireland because there's a lot of green grass there. But no, it's like an anti-British thing. So let's fast forward to the mid-1840s. For 7 years, beginning in 1845, Ireland is struggling, and that is an understatement. There's a blight that makes all the potatoes rot, and most of Ireland is living almost entirely on potatoes, which there are reasons for that. And once again, if you skip last week, maybe go back and listen and then come back to this one. I didn't realize how interconnected they were, but I don't want to repeat a bunch of stuff you've already heard if you did listen last week. So terrible, terrible famine in Ireland, which is now part of the UK. Britain is doing almost nothing to help. They just blame it all on the Irish, who they perceive as lazy, and they provide very little aid because of these stereotypes. This results in the deaths of 1 million Irish people, and another 2 million leave the country, immigrating to Britain, Canada, and the United States by the shipload.
Stay tuned. I'll be right back after a quick break.
Ah, it worked. Hello. There you are. Andrew here, and this is Shandor.
Hello.
We've got a brand new season of the Family Histories podcast for you with another 7 fascinating guests who'll be telling us about their secretive granny, a brave sailor, a political poet, a merchant seaman, a priestly lover, a resistance member, and a magnificent aunt that they've discovered in their family trees. And did I mention that there's a secret time machine? Nope, of course I didn't. Anyway, search for the Family Histories podcast after this episode to join us on our trip back in time. Okay, you can switch it off now.
These are not Presbyterian Irish immigrants leisurely trying to fit in with native-born Americans. These are desperate, half-starved Catholic immigrants who pour into ports and then struggle to find work. They are traumatized and downtrodden. They face intense discrimination from Americans who feel they have no right entering the country, never mind that they're basically refugees. The nativist movement comes back full force, the know-nothings, right? The ones who believe America should just be Protestant, native-born Americans. And this is what I'll never understand, because these dudes, these white dudes that are part of the American Party, the nativists, are also immigrants. I mean, they're descendants of immigrants. They are not indigenous to these lands. Their ancestors did the exact same thing the Irish are now doing, and yet still, they also didn't seem to understand why Native Americans would be upset about foreign immigrants with a different religion coming in and taking over. How incredibly hypocritical is this whole situation? And it goes even deeper, because Most of these guys fancied themselves descendants of Protestant English immigrants, like Mayflower stock, right? But it was the British, the Roman British, but same thing, their ancestors, that brought Catholicism to Ireland to begin with, forced it down the throats of the pagan Celts. And then Henry VIII and the split with the Catholic Church, and now they're all, ooh, Catholicism is the worst, you guys suck. And the Irish are like, but you're the ones who made us be Catholic. And just none of it makes any sense. Honestly, humans are so weird. So this anti-Irish, anti-immigrant, anti-Catholic movement pushes this influx of Irish immigrants down, down, down into the lowest pits of society. I mean, they are at the bottom. So, okay, you've left your homeland. You're isolated. Everyone hates you. You're trying to fit in with American society, but also not lose the Irish part of you. Irish immigrants start to cling to St. Patrick's Day as a celebration of being Irish. It was something that brought Irish immigrants together and a way that they remembered and honored the culture and heritage they were forced to leave behind. It was also kind of a show of defiance against all the Irish haters, almost in the same way that gay pride parades are, right? Loud and proud, except green instead of rainbow. After the Civil War, Irish immigrants became much more accepted. Tens of thousands of Irish soldiers had served in the war, and they had proven themselves worthy of being American, I guess. And after that, everyone stopped hating them, and they were able to gradually assimilate into American society, hold positions in government, enact political policies and whatnot that improve the lives of Irish Americans. Which, you know, it helps that they're white. 200,000 African Americans also fought in the Civil War, but their service didn't do quite as much for their acceptance as American citizens or even as human beings. They remained second-class citizens for at least another century. Anyway, after the Irish became accepted as Americans after the Civil War, St. Patrick's Day celebrations spread and grew. Even non-Irish Americans started celebrating by wearing green and joining the parades and merriment. Part of that was political. There were a bunch of Irish Americans now. They're Catholic, so they have a ton of kids. Plus, they were still pouring in from Ireland for decades after the famine ended. Politicians start to realize that they need the Irish vote if they want to get into office. They become a swing group, essentially. So these hopeful politicians start showing up at St. Patrick's Day parades and events and schmoozing with the Irish to try to get their collective Irish vote. This is part of the reason why the holiday caught on with non-Irish, non-Catholic Americans. Corned beef and cabbage became the official meal of St. Patrick's Day, which, ew, but okay. This was also an American invention with a particularly disgusting origin. In Ireland, they ate ham and cabbage. That was the traditional Irish version of this meal. But in the US, corned beef replaced the ham because it was much cheaper. And remember, these are incredibly impoverished immigrants starting this US St. Patrick's Day tradition. So they swapped the ham for corned beef. Corned beef was so cheap because of where it came from. There were a lot of Irish immigrants living in the slums of Lower Manhattan. They just got off the ships and plopped down and were like, cool, I'll just eat out of this dumpster. I mean, not really, but kind of. They would go down to the docks and buy the leftover provisions off of ships that were returning from the tea trade in China. They bought leftover salted beef off of these ships for a penny a pound, took it home, and boiled it three times to try to get rid of the saltiness. They added cabbage during the last boil, just to make it that much tastier. And there you go, corned beef and cabbage was born. So this was trash meat, old leftover trash meat that had been on a ship for months. But that's how desperate Irish immigrants were. And because it was mostly Irish people who were forced to resort to this, corned beef and cabbage became an Irish-American dish and therefore got associated with St. Patrick's Day. In the 20th century, St. Patrick's Day really took off as an excuse to party, whether you were Irish or not. Lots of parties and parades and wearing green and drinking beer. That was thanks to a Budweiser marketing campaign, by the way. That's why beer became associated with St. Patrick's Day. Yeah, we got God on that one. Chicago went as far as to dye its entire river green, starting in 1962. City pollution control workers there used green dye to try to trace illegal sewage dumping in the river. And they realized, hey, cool, it turns the river green. Let's do this on St. Patrick's Day. So each year they started dumping 100 pounds of green vegetable dye into the river, which was enough to dye it green for a week. Today, they've dropped it to just 40 pounds because of environmental concerns. So it's only green for a few hours, which is fine. I mean, I'm cool with, like, no dye in the river, but whatever. At this point, though, St. Patrick's Day is still just a Catholic holy day over in Ireland. It's not a party holiday at all. They go to church, and the pubs are closed. It's that kind of a day. It's not until TVs become a thing that Irish people start seeing how Americans are celebrating St. Patrick's Day. They're seeing it on TV, and they're like, hey, that looks fun. Why aren't we doing that? We're more Irish than they are. What the heck? So they decide they want in on the fun. They repeal the law that made the pubs have to close in 1961, and they start doing it up like the Americans. They use it as a way to draw tourism to Ireland with a multi-day St. Patrick's Day festival in Dublin that started in 1996 that draws millions of people to the city each year. You're welcome for that, Ireland. So there's really only one thing left to talk about, and that's leprechauns. Because what the heck do they have to do with any of this? You know leprechauns, like the little men in green top hats who hide pots of gold at the end of rainbows and leave footprints all over your elementary school classroom. Those guys. The earliest mention of leprechauns comes from a medieval Irish text called The Adventure of Fergus, Son of Letty, which is about a mythical king of Ulster, which is in Northern Ireland, named Fergus. In this story, leprechauns are called Lucorpane, and they are described as small-bodied water sprites who basically try to drown Fergus, but fail. He grabs them by their necks and demands that they grant him three wishes. This mythical creature, the leprechaun, probably came from ancient Celtic belief in fairies, who were like tiny people that had magical powers. Leprechauns became known as mischievous, probably because of the whole trying to drown Fergus thing. They often employed trickery in an attempt to protect their treasure. So they're basically like naughty, deceptive fairies from ancient Celtic lore that got immortalized in The Adventure of Fergus, Son of Letty. I'm not totally sure what they have to do with St. Patrick's Day, though, to be honest. Leprechauns actually have their own holiday on March 13th. I think they just are sort of a symbol of Ireland in general. And as we know, St. Patrick's Day celebrations came to symbolize all things Irish. And it's a party holiday, so it's pretty debaucherous, like leprechauns themselves. They're kind of like dirty tricksters, so, you know, they fit right in. So the story of St. Patrick's Day really winds itself around in circles. It starts with St. Patrick, who was British, bringing Catholicism to Ireland. Then it becomes a symbol of Irish pride for Irish immigrants defending themselves against British descendants, kin of St. Patrick, who now hate Catholicism, even though their ancestors are the one who forced it on the Irish to begin with. And then it starts to look like so much fun that even non-Irish Americans, descendants of those who once hated the Irish, can't help but join in. And really, I think the moral of the story is we have got to stop hating things just because they're different. Different does not automatically mean bad. It might even be good, like green beer good, okay? I'm not Irish or Catholic, but I'm still going to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. I'm choosing to celebrate it as a day that represents the triumph of authenticity and acceptance. It was a day the downtrodden Irish immigrants showed their true colors and honored their Irish heritage, shoved it in the faces of the haters and the bullies, and they had so much fun doing it that the bullies couldn't help but join them. Everyone wears green on St. Patrick's Day. For one day, we are all Irish. We are all one. That unity, that acceptance, was a long time coming. And for that, I will raise a glass today. Thank you all so very much for listening to History Fix. I hope you found this story interesting and maybe you even learned something new. Be sure to follow my Instagram at History Fix Podcast to see some images that go along with this episode and to stay on top of new episodes as they drop. And as I mentioned earlier, I'd also really appreciate it if you would rate and follow History Fix on whatever app you're using to listen and help me spread the word by telling a few friends about it. That will make it much easier to get your next fix. Information used in this episode was sourced from History.com, Time Magazine, CUNY Academic Commons, Dechara, and Oxford Reference. As always, links to these sources can be found in the show notes.